Blog Talk Radio. Look at their roster. look at their roster right now. When you got, you know, John Lackey, it's one of the worst contracts in baseball. You have Carl Crawford. Everybody knew Carl Crawford wasn't worth $142 million. A guy who, in a good year, will maybe hit you 12 runs. He had 18 steals this year. I mean, it was J.D. Drew. You know, guys like Mike Cameron over the years, Julio Lugo. They've had so many bad contracts in the past 4 to 5 years. It's ridiculous. And, you know, when you look at the season that Boston had, you know, it's really, it's basically three seasons. I mean, they start out 2-10. Everybody's ready to push the panic button. You know, I myself thought that, you know, they'll get it together. They'll be fine. It's no big thing. Then for the majority of the season, they were 81-42. They were the best team in baseball, arguably with the Philadelphia Phillies. You know, going in September, they were 81-42. Came in September, you know, they are a half game behind the Yankees. Yankees are playing great. And, of course, they finished September at 7-20, capped off by one of the great nights, regular season, going to great nights in baseball history as far as how the season ended with what Tampa did with the Yankees and, you know, Tampa and the Yankees, Atlanta, Philadelphia, and then, of course, the Orioles taking out Boston. But, I put this on Theo Epstein. Theo Epstein put together these players. They stopped trusting their farm system. They started trading prospects. And now you have a clubhouse full of guys who, you know, you have some poisons. I mean, you have more than just one bad apple. You might have three or four bad apples. And you can't get rid of all those bad apples because they're locked into contracts 4 or 5 years down the road. So what do? You basically fire Terry Franco, though officially it's not be called a fire. They just did not choose to exercise his option for 2012-2013. Same as a fire in my book. Francona said one thing through all the classy remarks he made in that press conference. One thing he said that came out, it was that he was unsure about the ownership. That told you everything you needed to know about how ownership felt about Francona, and that was as clear as day. I mean, I told you they did not want Francona back as manager of the Red Sox. I believe that Francona. I believe that Epstein wants him back. I believe that the Epstein-Francona relationship was a good one. You know, yeah, there are managers, and managers are always going to have fights over the course of a season, long season. So I don't think that there was a major problem with that relationship. I don't think that Theo Epstein wanted Francona out. But to me, this thing went above Theo Epstein. Theo Epstein is a general manager, but Theo Epstein does not, you know, call the shots. You know, overall, I mean, you got Werner, you got John Henry, Werner, Lucchino. Those guys, the Boston ownership, those guys are hands-on owners. Right? They give Theo power to make moves, but those guys, things like this happen. It's not because of Theo Epstein. So Boston now, you know, has to sit. First of all, the first thing the Red Sox need to do is rebuild that pitching staff. I mean, coming into this year, you had one guy on that pitching staff that you could absolutely trust, and that was John Lester. Everybody else, I mean, Dice K, you know, Josh Beckett with his injuries and being inconsistent, you really trust him to stay healthy the whole season. Clay Buchholz coming off one good year. John Lackey, we know he's a nutcase. You know, they really had nobody on that pitching staff who they could completely trust. Again, they have one guy. And the comical thing is they went in thinking that they were too deep with their starting rotation. And it was that starting rotation that cost them in the month of September some of the worst starting pitching that you'll ever see. Still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. We'll talk about Saturday morning headlines. And also coming up, the Redskin Report. 347-215-6180 is your call number. Just getting started here on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. We'll be right back. After the 10 o'clock hour on this latest edition of Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, Cyril Quinn, taking you to 10 o'clock. Early start today as we talk about the world of sports. Big sports weekend, a lot going on as far as, you know, baseball playoffs, college football, and of course the NFL. We'll have our NFL picks later on in the program. Saturday morning headlines. NBA players and players, the NBA Players Association and owners will continue to meet throughout the course of the weekend. They met yesterday in New York, and apparently there was a yelling match between Dwayne Wade and Commissioner Stern. Though the yelling was one sided, as from what many people are reporting, that Stern pointed his finger at Dwayne Wade. Wade said, you know, don't point your finger at me, I'm not your child, and so on. Players were about to storm out of the meeting. They had to be calmed down by Billy Hunter before continuing on. And, there is a sense of urgency. Now, on October 1st, now is, you know, it's do or die. It's make it, it's, you know, we're either going to make a deal or not. Now we've sped up this process. Now we're meeting on consecutive days. You know, where was this at in August? Where was this at in September? Where was this at in July, for that matter? You know, now you got people yelling. You got the stars coming out. You got the stars coming out, standing united. You know, with Durant and Wade and LeBron James and Ray Allen and Baron Davis. He's not a star, but he was one of the 21 players who were in New York for the meetings. I mean, the NBA just go away. I'm sick of the NBA right now. The NBA, as far as I'm concerned, can go away until, you know, April. Start the season in April when the play. Start the season with the playoffs. Do a lottery system right where you just put the teams that you thought were going to make the playoffs. And I really don't care because I'm Kobe and Italy go away. You know, LeBron James and Dwayne Wade and the whole Miami thing with the charity thing go away. You know, David Stern and the owners go away. And I'm tired of the NBA. I mean, at least the NFL, they were talking. Now, you might not like what was coming out of their mouths and some of the posturing by Goodell and D. Smith, but they were talking. You know, again, the NBA up until this point has been, you know, going through the motions, making statements through the media, you know, planning pickup basketball games. But nothing was getting accomplished. Nothing was getting done. Now they're serious. Now, on October 1st. Tampa Bay shuts out Texas 9-0. The Rays, you know, continue their momentum. They carried over to finish the regular season. Couple of home runs from Kelly Shopik, home run by Johnny Damon, who seems to always come up big in the postseason, whoever he's with, whether it be the Yankees or Red Sox. But the big story was, of course, Matt Moore, who at 23 years old shut down that vaunted Texas offense. 7 innings, just 2 hits, no runs. They knocked around C.J. Wilson and put themselves in, Tampa Bay now puts themselves in a position where they will have their best pitcher going in James Shields for Game 2 and more than likely go home with David Price in Game 3. Rays are in good shape. I mean, obviously Game 1 of a best of five is always big because it's a best of five, and to go to Texas, and going back to last season, this is the 6th straight game that the road team has won with these two teams meeting. The home team has not won a game when these two teams have played over the last couple of years. Something very extremely interesting going back to last year. Of course, you remember Tampa Bay's season ended at the hands of one Cliff Lee in Tampa in Game 5 last year. That's the one thing about Texas. I like this Texas team coming in. I think this is certainly far from over. They better win tonight. They better win today, though. But coming into this series, that was one question mark. Who was the show-stopping pitcher for the Rangers? Who was that legit number one? I mean, C.J. Wilson, Derek Holland, those guys are good pitchers, but they are not aces. They're not number one caliber pitchers. Cliff Lee still is, and definitely was for the Rangers. So that might come back to bite Texas throughout the course of the series. Of course, last night you had the Yankees and Detroit rained out. Again, they got tricked by the weather. I mean, you can't sit there and blame them and say, hey, well, how could they have started the game knowing the rain? They thought it would rain a little bit. They thought they would have a clear window to get the game in. That was not the case. So you lose Verlander and Sabathia until game four. If there is a game four, you'll lose those pitchers. And the way this series is going to go now, they're going to play four straight days. If there's no more rain, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday. Fister and Nova will pitch Sunday. You have Scherzer and Garcia will pitch Monday, and you will have probably. I'm thinking you'll have Verlander and Sabathia. For that Monday game, considering that they only threw, 25 pitches. So I'm thinking that Verlander and Sabathia will probably be able to pitch Monday. Regardless, you're only going to have the one game in the series, Verlander or Sabathia, in the series. So it's going to come down to the supporting cast in terms of the pitching staff for this particular series. Again, nothing you could do about the rain. It's been something that's been ongoing all year long in Major League Baseball, especially on the East Coast. But we'll see how the rest of that series turns out. Of course, you have a couple other series that will be kicking off. Milwaukee hosting Arizona. Arizona is a huge long shot in these playoffs. And the Philadelphia, you have Game 2 of Tampa and Texas, and Philadelphia will host. St. Louis this evening. St. Louis is one of two teams to have a winning record against the Phillies, though I don't see that meaning anything going into this particular series. 347-215-6180 is your call number. When we return, we will have the Redskin report as the Skins look to bounce back from their Monday night loss to the Dallas Cowboys. We'll talk about that and much, much more on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call.
Hey! Got to pay back!
Welcome back to this latest edition of Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, Redskin Report. Redskins, of course, blew a golden opportunity last Monday night to be 3-0 and atop the NFC East division with the losing the Cowboys 18-16. Again, you know, Redskins had plenty of opportunities, but the thing that came back and bit them was not being able to, number one, not being able to score in the red zone. They're able to get touchdowns in the red zone. And also, again, you know, the kicking game. I mean, they missed field goals, had a field goal blocked, a botched snap. It wasn't a botched snap, a dropped hold. The snap, nothing was wrong with the snap. The hold was bobbled. And, you know, they lose 18-16, and that was the difference in the game. Redskins, I thought in the second half of that game, got away from the run. You know, 17 of the last 19 plays were pass plays. If you put the ball in Rex Grossman's hands and you tell Rex Grossman to go win it, chances are you're going to get a bad interception or you're going to get a fumble. And where Rex Grossman has had no clue who the defense, Anthony Spencer, coming from behind, is called this thing called pocket presence. He does not have that. And that's why he, you know, basically commits a turnover a game. And I don't blame Rex Grossman as much as I blame the coaching staff and one Kyle Shanahan and Mike Shanahan. You've got to run the ball with this Redskins team. I don't care if Hightower is only averaging 3.5 yards a carry. Give Helu more carries. He's averaging almost 6 yards a carry if necessary. I don't care if they do gain very little yardage on the ground. It's about the attempts. You've got to run the football. I mean, the Redskins, you know, this team has to be built around the running game because, number one, Grossman just not that level of quarterback that's going to win games single-handedly for you. And number two, your offensive line is not built yet to where it's a premier pass-protecting offensive line. They're much better when they are much better in terms of run blocking than they are pass blocking. So, you know, Redskins, again, blew an opportunity but still have a chance to make up for it with a win in St. Louis. You know, St. Louis is a wounded animal right now. They're 0-3. They're desperate for a win. They'll be at home. Steven Jackson should be healthier. He did not look good last week against a good Baltimore defense, but only had 23 yards rushing. But again, he should be healthier. The Rams are a mess right now. They have a number of players that are banged up or injured. I just think, I mean, but this is, you know, this is the definition of a trap game for the Redskins. Despite the fact they're coming off a loss, you know, it's a short week, emotional game, loss versus Dallas. Maybe you don't think St. Louis is that good, even though they should think St. Louis is that good based on what St. Louis did to them last year when they beat them in the same, you know, at the Edward L. Jones Dome, 30-16. So that should be more than motivation enough. And a lot of those players, and you have a few of those players that were on the team last year that returned this year. So this, again, Redskins have a golden opportunity to be 3-1 going into the bye week. They need to be 3-1 going into the bye week if they have any realistic chances or hopes of making the playoffs. Because after the bye week, again, they'll have Philly, Buffalo, Carolina, that is not easy by any stretch of imagination. Those would be three tough games, especially having at Carolina, at Buffalo. So this will be a big game for them to win as a schedule. You know, we'll start to soften. You know, once you get past Carolina, Buffalo, it will start to soften up a bit with a couple of matchups. But again, you know, Redskins, you know, these are the types of, you know, if you want to make the playoffs, these are the types of games that you have to win. Because St. Louis is Spagnuolo, it took, you know, his job, who knows how much job security he has after this year. St. Louis has a 4-12, 3-13 type season. And St. Louis, frankly, is just bad right now. Redskins should be able to run the ball against St. Louis. St. Louis, you know, is giving up 174 yards rushing a game. They're one of the worst defenses in general in the NFL. They give up over 400 yards, well over 400 yards of total offense. So, I mean, this is a game where, you know, you want to see Hightower go 25 or whatever. You want to see Helu get 10 to 12 carries. You want to see the Redskins get 35 to 40 carries on the ground. To me, that's a number, 35 to 40 on the ground. And we'll see how it goes. We'll see how much this Redskins team has changed or has matured. That was not demonstrated by one, of course, D'Angelo Hall, who I just wish he shut up. I wish D'Angelo Hall just, I don't want any comments, you know, when the Redskins lose from D'Angelo Hall. I don't want to hear about it. Because, you know, it's never his fault. Like, it's never his fault. It's always you know, Jim Haslett's fault, you know, Greg Blasch's fault, whoever's the defensive coordinator, whoever's the defensive coordinator is their fault. Now, I did not agree with the blitz call myself, but again, I don't play for the Washington Redskins. I can say that. We can, you know, you're a media member, you can say that, you're a fan, you can say that. You keep that inside the locker room. You keep your D'Angelo. First of all, you got burnt, number one. You got burnt. Number two, you grabbed the face mask. It's just that simple. It was so obvious. It wasn't even like it. Come on. It's like, dude, that was not, you know, there was no art. There was no grazing in the face mask. You grabbed the face mask and got a dumb penalty and put the Cowboys back, put the Cowboys in field goal range without even having to take a snap. So, again, I don't want to hear anything about it. And again, I don't want to hear anything about, you know, the blitz call. The Redskins, when they blitz quarterbacks, you know, quarterbacks, the opposing quarterbacks' passer ratings have dropped well over 20 points on when the Redskins have blitzed. I think opposing quarterbacks have a passer rating of 68. So Redskins have done an excellent job with their blitz, when they blitz over the course of these first three games. So that on his argument, it was just stupid. And you know, later on in the week, somewhat recanted. You know, I was overzealous, whatever. Nobody wants to hear from you. You got burnt, okay? You got burnt on a 3rd and 21 by Dez Bryant, who clearly is not healthy. You're supposedly supposed to be this number one. You call yourself. You know, D'Angelo Hall is the only one that calls himself a number one cornerback. Out of anybody in the NFL, out of anybody in that locker room, D'Angelo Hall, he's the only one who thinks he's the number one quarterback. So, again, don't want to hear from him anymore. And you know, I think the Redskins should be in good shape with this game. St. Louis is just so bad. I mean, it's so bad defensively. So we'll see what happens as the Redskins look to go to 3-1 heading into the bye week. 347-215-6180 is your call number. Saturday morning wake up call poll question of the morning is who will win the World Series. We'll talk about that. We'll also talk about it coming up. We have our college game of the week. We'll talk about that on this latest edition of the Saturday morning wake up call. After the 10 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call. College Game of the Week, of course, Nebraska travels up to Camp Randall Stadium to take on the Wisconsin Badgers in a Big Ten showdown. First time in 3 years that you have two Big Ten teams that are ranked in the top 10. You have Nebraska coming from the Big 12. You have Russell Wilson coming from North Carolina State. And to me, I look at this game, and you know, the one matchup that you have to be zero in on is Nebraska's defensive line taking on Wisconsin's offensive line. Now, Nebraska's defense has not been great this year, but they had a couple guys injured. They're going to get those guys back for this game, and they're going to need them because this is not, you know, your father's Wisconsin Badgers from an offensive standpoint. It's not just, you know, 3 yards in a cloud of dust. They do still have, again, that massive offensive line, great running game, but they have now, a guy who makes their offense just basically unstoppable in Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson has come in right away and has been just has more touchdowns than he does incompletions. It's 13 touchdowns, 12 incompletions. He's been played remarkable football, and to me, he's the difference in this game. I'm not in love with Taylor Martinez from Nebraska. I think he's a great athlete. Again, I don't like him as a thrower. I think he can be rattled. So, I mean, though Nebraska has a very good offense, it's not, to me, not on par with Wisconsin. It's one of the many reasons why I like Wisconsin in this game. I think Wisconsin, again, at home, it has been great over the course of the last 3 or 4 years. And really, in their history, they've been always play well at home. They still have the great running game with the massive offensive line. And, again, now they have a quarterback that can go out there and throw for 300, 400 yards. If you put 8 or 9 men in a box, you can't do that with Wisconsin this year. You can't do that. I mean, it used to be that you could do that and try to slow down and run again. They still be able to run it anyway, but you at least could probably slow it down with 8 or 9 in a box. You can't, you know, if Nebraska tries to put 8 or 9 in a box against Russell Wilson, then it's going to be, you know, it's going to be a long night for the Nebraska defense. So I think that, you know, I like Wisconsin in this game. A lot of people believe that these two teams will meet again in the Big Ten, championship. We'll see about that. Certainly, you know, Wisconsin, I think, certainly will be there. But I'm not quite so. I'm going to be really paying attention to Nebraska tonight because I'm not quite there with Nebraska. I'm not quite there with Nebraska this year. Neither team has played anybody. But I want to, you know, really get a good look of what Nebraska is. Yeah, but that is certainly not the only big matchup in college football. A great weekend in college football. Clemson, Virginia Tech. I wonder about Clemson coming off that, you know, coming off that win against Florida State. They traveled to Virginia Tech. Clemson on paper has a better team, but Virginia Tech is certainly always great at home, and Virginia Tech, until somebody takes it away from them, are the team to beat in the ACC. That's all there is to it. I'll be wearisome of Clemson going into Lane Stadium taking on Virginia Tech. We'll see about that. And of course, another showdown, primetime showdown with Florida host Alabama. Florida's kind of been that has been was not talked about a lot in the preseason. I mean, as a team that could contend for SEC championship, even national championship. Apparently, their offense, they have a big-time offense with the running backs. Brantley's played well at quarterback. Charlie Weiss, you know, and Charlie Weiss, listen, he was a terrible college coach. But as a play caller, as the offensive coordinator, Charlie Weiss is tremendous. I mean, you saw what he did with Kansas City last year. He's brought it to Florida this year. He's a great coordinator, offensive coordinator. You saw what he did in New England all those years with Brady. With winning the Super Bowl. So he's done a wonderful job there right so far. Again, playing, I think Alabama pound for pound still is the best team in the country. That, even on the road, that Alabama defense just, you know, if they get anything from the quarterback position, they're almost unbeatable if they get anything from the quarterback. Because you know they're going to run the ball, and you know that they're going to play great defense. I mean, they have no weaknesses from a defense standpoint, whether it's in secondary, whether it's with their front seven, their linebackers, special teams they can score. So I think Alabama will win that game, but I'll be getting very interested to watch Florida and just to see how good Florida is. Because coming into this season, and we did an SEC preview on this show, I thought Florida, Tennessee, I thought at the SEC East, Florida, I thought in that SEC East that that South Carolina was clearly the team to beat in SEC East. Because it was South Carolina and just everybody else. And that you would have Florida, that you would have Alabama and LSU battling out in the SEC West. Now, based on what you've seen early on, you certainly have to toss Florida in the mix. You're not even sure about South Carolina with, you know, Stephen Garcia, who, you know, Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde with his quarterback play. So, definitely be keeping my eyes on these three particular games: Nebraska, Wisconsin, Clemson, Virginia Tech, Florida hosting Alabama. 347-215-6180 is your call number. As we discuss the world of sports, when we return too much passing. We'll talk about the NFL and this obsession with the passing game. We'll talk about that, and we'll also have our NFL picks on the way on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Welcome back to this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. As we discuss the world of sports, 347-215-6180 is your call number. And when you look at the NFL right now and look at the state of the game, it is evident more now more than ever of how much of a passing league it has become. Coming into this week, you have nine players. They're averaging over 300 yards passing per game. You have at least you have about five guys who are on pace to break Dan Marino's record for most passing yardage in NFL history at 5,084 yards. Tom Brady's going to break that record. Tom Brady and I can see it. Tom Brady and Drew Brees are probably going to break that record. I mean, Brady's on pace for a ridiculous 7,000 yards. He's not going to get that. But I think Brady will have 6,000 yards passing. I'll put you there. I think Brady goes for 6,000 this year. You only have five running backs averaging 20 or more carries. Comparison to 2005 when you had 11 running backs averaging 20 or more carries. And what it has done now, listen, it is pure entertainment. It's great theater, but what it has done is, to me, is added to the parity of the NFL because you have too many teams out here who think that they can throw the ball on every down, and what that does is that, to me, that evens the playing field. That absolutely evens the playing field. That's one of the reasons why I think Green Bay is clearly, to me, the team to beat. In the NFL, is a team to beat in the NFL because they still try to run the football. It's not so much the yards per carry; it's the attempts. They make a conscious effort to continue to try to run the football. You know, New England, forget about it. You know, San Diego, those teams like that. They run the football by accident just to give Tom Brady or Phillip Rivers arm a rest. And, you know, what has happened is, you know, the offenses in college football have become so sophisticated, the passing offenses, that the jump between college and football and pro football, as far as the quarterback position goes, it's not as big as it once was. It's not. Now, again, if you're trying to build a championship caliber team, I think I still think you need to focus a little bit more on the running game. I understand it is a passing league. You need good receivers. You need somebody that can pull the trigger. But again, they're not, there are a handful of elite quarterbacks in the league. The problem is you got guys who are not elite quarterbacks, like Rex Grossman, who are still trying to throw the ball, 35 to 40 times a game. That's where the problem lies. That is a major problem in the NFL. And that's why you have games where, Oakland can beat the Jets. I mean, Oakland, last week, I mean, how many times after, in the NFL show or the NFL wrap up, have I said, we've gone back, looked at the stats, and said, damn, why did they throw the ball? They threw the ball how many times? Why did this team throw the ball 38 times and only ran it 11 times? Which was the case with the Bears and Packers last week. And again, I don't see it. I think it gets worse before it gets better. I really do. I mean, again, I think this is, we're seeing something to where there's a change that we're seeing that is just going to continue to go until the defense catches up with it, until the defense makes an adjustment to where teams have to run a little bit more. It will never be a time where, like the 80s, early 90s, where this league was about the running game. That day is done. Or the 60s, 70s, forget about it. That's like trying to find an A-track. It's not going to happen. But now the question is, what adjustment does the defense make to all these teams going to strictly, pass mode? We'll see what happens with that. 347-215-6180 is your call number. When we return, NFL picks on this week 4 in the league where no contract is guaranteed. We'll talk about that and much, much more in this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call. Contract is guaranteed. We're going to begin in Big D, Jerry's World. Dallas Cowboys coming off a good win versus my Washington Redskins on Monday night, push the record to 2-1. But they host an up-and-coming team. They host a team that features one of the best defensive lines in all of football. They host a team that features a budding star at quarterback. And I'm talking about the Detroit Lions. The Lions come in undefeated, 3-0. Matthew Stafford playing great. Calvin Johnson, arguably the best receiver in football. This is going to be a very interesting matchup because from the standpoint of Detroit's D line versus Dallas's offensive line. If you watch them in that game, you saw that Dallas could not even snap the ball at times. Well, if they had those issues against Detroit, they're going to get Tony Romo killed. I like Detroit in this game. I think Detroit definitely can make. Not only I think Detroit has an advantage as far as their defensive line versus Dallas' offensive line, Detroit's receivers versus that Dallas secondary. Now, the Redskins just didn't have good enough personnel to exploit that. But again, Detroit has an absolute beast, Megatron, in Calvin Johnson. Who is going to play Calvin Johnson? Detroit's receivers all together have played well. They have 8 receivers averaging 11 more yards per catch. Again, Stafford is going to be a star. If Stafford can stay healthy, he's absolutely going to be a big-time player in this league. I like Detroit 27-21. They will improve to 4-0 on the season and drop Dallas to 2-2. Dallas is a 1-point favorite in that particular game, which certainly you have no problem with considering they are at home. But I'll take Detroit to win that game. Game number 2. Pittsburgh travels down to the Reliance Stadium to take on the Houston Texans. Both teams 2-1. Both teams, to me, have something to prove, especially Houston. I was not impressed by the Steelers last week. I was disgusted by the Steelers' performance last week against the Indianapolis Colts, letting Indianapolis hang in that game. Indianapolis obviously having a chance to win that game. Houston, again, played well against New Orleans, but showed that they're really not ready for that level of play, not quite yet. If you're Houston and you not only you want to win that division, which you should, you want us to take you serious in terms of the playoffs, go out there and beat the Steelers at home. Steelers defense is not what it once was. They are a little older. They've only generated one turnover. One turnover they've only generated this entire season, which is just, and that was the Troy Polamalu hit, the James Harrison hit, the Troy Polamalu, fumble return for a touchdown. Again, Steelers are missing something here. They're not generating turnovers. Offensively, they cannot run the ball. Roethlisberger is still great, but again, you're counting on Roethlisberger to be, Superman here and throw the ball all over the place. Despite that, I'm still not sold on Houston. I think Roethlisberger has a big day against that shaky Houston Texans secondary. I think this is going to be a high-scoring game. I think Houston will be able to make plays against that Steeler defense with their secondary. 31-28, Steelers win in a shootout. I feel Houston is a 4-point favorite in this game at home, but I like the Steelers to come out on top. Game number 3, New England travels to the left coast to take on the Oakland Raiders. New England coming off a brutal loss to the Buffalo Bills, up 21-0. Brady with the 4 picks. Despite having another game of well over 300 yards passing, he had 387 yards passing. Again, the Raiders, Raiders have played well this season. 2-1 easily could be 3-0, but this is just not a good matchup for the Raiders. First of all, New England coming off a loss is deadly. They have not lost back-to-back games since 2009. The matchup is just not good because what New England does well, Oakland is terrible at, and that is pass defense. New England, Tom Brady is going to have 400 yards passing in this game. There's no question about it. That Buffalo, that Raiders secondary is bad. Their pass defense has been awful this year. I think New England will be able to contain McFadden enough. I just don't see New England, the Raider running game, being able to keep up with New England's passing game. You're going to tell me that Jason Campbell is going to torch New England's secondary? I have to believe to see it. I like New England 35-27. It will be entertaining. It will be an entertaining game, but I will take I will take New England to rebound and win this game. Game number four, my upset special of the week, Carolina traveling to Chicago. Chicago's a 7-point favorite. Both teams are at 1-2. I was, you know, listen, anybody can lose to the Packers. I understand that. My problem with the Bears coming into this game, my problem with the Bears throughout the course of the season is the fact that they don't realize that they have one of the best running backs in football in terms of Matt Forte. Last weekend, 9 rushes, 2 yards. Mike Marks wants to throw the ball all over the place. He's going to get Jay Cutler killed out there. And, again, I just don't like the Bears. That Bears secondary, to me, offensive line is still struggling. The secondary is even worse. I say Cam Newton and Steve Smith have bounced back games statistically. I say Cam Newton goes out there and throws 300 yards. Steve Smith has a big game. I'm taking Carolina to win 24-21 in the upset, in my upset special. I don't even think it's a big upset. I think 7 points is way too much. I easily could have just took this game, could have took the Bears to win a game by a field goal or definitely less than 7 points. But I'm going all out and saying, telling you that the Carolina Panthers will upset the Chicago Bears 24-21 down in Soldier Field. When we return, we'll talk about the game of the week that's coming up on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call. After the 10 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call, Cyril Quinn. Game of the week, as we continue our week 4 picks in the league where no contract is guaranteed. Game of the week features, of course, the New York Jets traveling to Baltimore to take on the Ravens. Of course, last year, these two teams opened the season. Well, not opened the season, but this was the first Monday night game with Baltimore winning. Baltimore is a 4-point favorite. Two similar teams, but I think Baltimore does what they do a little bit better than the Jets. I don't trust the Jets right now with that lackadaisical running game. And you're putting the ball in Mark Sanchez's hands and saying, you know what, Mark, go out there and win games for us. Not going to happen. Nick Mangold is out this week. Haloi Ngata is going to have a field day. Absolute field day in that Jet backfield. Expect a big performance out of him. Expect Ray Rice to have a big game. I'm just not feeling the Jets right now. I was very much taken back with that Oakland performance. Raiders able to just physically run over the Jets. I like Baltimore in this game, 23-16. Baltimore is no offensive juggernaut themselves, so I think that will keep the Jets in this game. But, again, there's no way I could pick the Jets to win this game. I'll take Baltimore I'll take Baltimore again, 23-16. So there you go. I have Baltimore taking out the Jets, Carolina upsetting Chicago, New England rebounding against Oakland, Pittsburgh over Houston, and the Detroit Lions. Yes, the Lions will start out 4-0. And defeat the Dallas Cowboys. Week 4 picks in a league where no contract is guaranteed. We'll be right back. the Saturday morning wake up call, 347-215-6180. Of course, the call, the poll question of the morning was, who will win the World Series, Philadelphia Yankees, Brewers, or another team? I like in the World Series, my World Series picks are Philadelphia and Tampa. I think Tampa is one of these teams, you know, every year a team gets hot in the postseason that you don't expect it. Last year was San Francisco. This year I think it will be the Rays. You know, they're coming in playing where they got a lot of mojo going right now in a wide-open American League. And the reason why I like Tampa, I think they have the best pitching. I think Tampa has the best pitching from top to bottom in the American League. I think they can score just enough runs. I think they've basically been in playoff mode for the last month or so. So playing on the road, playing pressurized games will be nothing new to them. Philadelphia, of course, best team in baseball, best pitching, and I like again in the rematch of the 2008 World Series with the Philadelphia Phillies winning it. I like the same result this time around with the Philadelphia Phillies winning another championship, which will be their second in 4 years. Under Charlie Manuel. Listen, pitching, and more pitching. I mean, when you talk about having, Cole Hamels is their third starter, all right? Cole Hamels would be a number one. First of all, he would be a number one on Texas. He would be a number two on Florida, on Detroit. He would be a number one on Tampa Bay. He would be a number one on Milwaukee. He would be a number one on Arizona. I'm giving you the other playoff teams that he would be either number one or number two on, other than the Philadelphia Phillies. He would be a number, one or two on the St. Louis Cardinals. Maybe even Wainwright, healthy, would still be a number one. But that's how deep the pitching staff is. You're talking about Cole Hamels, Cliff. You're talking about having Roy Halladay, Cliff Lee, and Cole Hamels to start off. And Roy Oswalt, if you wasn't paying attention, finished the season very strong and certainly would be at number four. He finished the season strong, pitched well, had a great game against Atlanta this past week. So he's almost all the way back. He's a number four starter. So I like the Phillies. I think they will have enough offense to get the job done, and I think they will be your world champion for 2011. It's going to wrap it up for this edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call. Tune in to the Redskin Report tomorrow at 5 p.m. Also, the NFL show. Stay tuned for the showtimes for that. I will see you next week. I will see you next week on another edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call. So long. Have a great weekend.